Hi, folks, and thanks for listening to the Seco Chamber podcast. A few quick things before we kick off. This is the conversation that we had with Keith Walsh, former 2FM broadcaster Keith Walsh, in relation to his victory at the Scope Section Department of Social Protection in relation to his employment status against RTE, where they deemed him to be an independent contractor, and in fact, he would have and should have been an employee all along. The full interview with Keith is available right now on patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and that's beside part two of this series where we discuss how former Minister for the Department of Social Protection, Regina Doherty, misled both myself and Martin, as well as the huge issues and question marks around the Eversheds process and how that was misportrayed by RTE. Both of those are available at patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's a price of a cheap pint to you, but to us, it's mics on, lights on, bills paid, and you'll be helping us carve out the bit of space we need to continue to have the conversations like the one you're about to listen to. So without further ado, enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and folks, we've promised you a scoop, a story, and yet another wrinkle in the... in the wall, I suppose, the bad plastering that's holding together the whole edifice of bogus self-employment that has been slowly unpicked and falling apart, even so far to the point where the outgoing Taoiseach made comment of it before he left, that he realised it was causing huge problems within RTE, that he himself acknowledged, even though many others seem to pretend. It's like Schrodinger's bailout, Martin. We've often sort of said, you know, if we don't look at it, it doesn't have to happen. But nonetheless, we are rejoined by two familiar faces, familiar voices to our listeners. One gentleman, Keith Walsh, who is more familiar than to Irish ears from his radio time, but you'll have heard him also at our brilliant live show in the Sugar Club, who himself and Angie Mazzetti stole the show, and Matt McGrahan. But before we get anywhere, Martin, you want to talk to Keith before we get to Cantankerous Matt?
Keith, first of all, I want to say congratulations. Great news. Glad to hear it.
Thank you, and thanks for all your help, obviously, as well.
Keith, will you tell people what has happened?
Well, I mean, do you want me to start at the beginning, or do you want me to...
Well, we'll jump in straight away. Well, let's start straight away. The Scope Section made a decision on your employment with RTE, and you were with RTE for 7 years continuously as a self-employed contractor. And just yesterday, you got a decision from the Scope Section, who carried out an investigation and made a determination for the 7 years you were working for RTE. And were you a contractor when you were working for RTE, Keith?
I wasn't, it turns out. It turns out that I was employee, full-time employee, and the contract I had wasn't actually a contract because of the way I worked. I know we've spoken about it before, but I worked Monday to Friday every week without fail, except on my holidays, obviously. I took the odd day off. But the reason it was decided that I was employees because I was the person who had to be there. I had to be there on Monday. I had to be there on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I couldn't substitute. It wasn't like I was the guy who serviced the photocopiers. It was my business. I could send my son in to service them. I could service them whenever I wanted. It was me. I had to be there. And lots of other reasons, but that's the main reason and one of the biggest reasons for the decision.
And that is a big part of the decision. Keith, will you tell us your story with RTE? You went to RTE as a relatively young man, and talent, as RTE would call you. You were talent. So tell us the story. How did you get into RTE and where it went from there?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about talent, but RTE is... the weirdest thing I find about RTE is the people that provide the content for RTE are the people that are the most disposable and the worst treated people. So you're talking about your newsreaders, your journalists, these people like me, they bring in to do a breakfast show, but they don't want to, they want to be able to, you know, they say things like, well, that's the nature of the business. You know, you're hot one day, you're not another day, whatever, but they want to be able to get rid of you. But we are the people that provide the content. And it's the people who are making the decisions about our employment and our status and deciding these things are literally the worst business people that ever walked on the planet. Like, it's not even that they've made a hames of this. They haven't made a hames of it because they've done nothing. These people don't work. They don't do anything. They mostly are there to make sure that you know, their job is safe. Their title is, you know, as far they'll schmooze until they get the title they want. They'll get as far up as they can, and that's mostly what they think about. And that's the reality of the situation is we've got some really, really, really possibly the worst business people running one of the most important businesses in the country. Right. I started with RTE 6.5 years ago, nearly 7 years ago. No, I'm gone out of there 4 years ago. So you're talking about 2014 I started. I was working for a company called Communicore at the time. I was doing a breakfast show there. I was the assistant program director. Actually, I was the program director there on a station called Phantom. I managed to leave there before, unfortunately, Phantom was changed and then ultimately closed down, which is another story. But so RTE got in contact with me. I'd worked with a fella before who'd now gotten the job as the head of 2FM. And he gave me a call and he said, here, do you want to talk to me about, well, he kind of just said, do you want to work on the breakfast show? And, you know, as you would be, I was a bit floored because I was working away. I wasn't even thinking about it. Phantom is a relatively small radio station. I'd worked in Spin. I'd worked in iRadio. You know, I hadn't worked in national radio up to this point. But this guy obviously believed in me, said, do you want to come and do the show?
Were you excited about it, Keith?
Absolutely. I mean, so excited about it. The guy, Joe, my friend, who I was doing the show with in Phantom, like, he was my friend. And I had to make that decision. Do I leave my friend and possibly, you know, it's a very difficult thing to do when you work with your friend and then you get an offer. There's a lot in that because we're both radio people. We both obviously want to be broadcasting at the highest level we can. And then when money gets an offer, it's very hard, first of all, to deliver that news. It's also very hard to make that decision. But I would have been an idiot to not take that job to stay with my friend, you know? So financially, for my family, for my wife, for the,
you know. So you took the RTE job and they came looking for you, Keith. The truth is they came. But what was the first contract? Or do you remember any stories about contracts or what your work situation was? Or was it more osmosis that you felt your way into it?
Well, no, it was fairly straight up in that I had a couple of meetings with this man. We talked about the job. I made the decision I was going to take it. I notified. Actually, the story was leaked, which caused a whole other load of shit for me. And I haven't really had that friendship that I had with Joe since. But yeah, and then I was told at one point, once I'd agreed to take the job, well, you have to become self-employed now, and that's how we're going to pay you. This is the amount you're going to get paid, and we're going to break that up into 12 amounts, so you get paid every month, but effectively you're self-employed and you have to.
Okay, just repeat that for me, Keith. I want you to repeat that slowly. You were offered an annual amount, which was then split into 12 equal payments.
Yeah.
And did you bill RTE for those payments?
Yeah, so you'd invoice RTE, just send in your invoice every month. They would pay the money into your account and then you look after. It was my job then to get it.
An accountant or whatever
else. And all that kind of stuff, yeah.
And was it one continuous contract for the 6 years you were there, Keith?
No, first contract we got was for 2 years. Second contract we got was for 3 years. Then we were kind of out of contract for a period. We got a contract for a year and a half then, I think. And then I got a final contract for 4 months, I think, at the end when they were kind of, they said, oh, look, this breakfast show is finishing up. There was a lot of weird shit going on. I feel like I was lured out of the breakfast show because looking back now, I should have never left. But I was told I had another show, which didn't transpire. So basically, I was lied to as well because they said, oh, look, you can do this show in the afternoon. We're going to move a few people around the breakfast show. If you're happy to take that, you know, I said, yeah, I'll take the show. Sounds like, you know, it's a new challenge. One of the people I was doing the breakfast show with anyway was moving on to the 9 o'clock slot. So I was like, yeah, I'll go to this evening slot. And I was, you know, I was actually looking forward to it because it's a hard slog doing breakfast for 5 years, you know, and it was a change. But that job turned out to not be a job. And that was it. I was left high and dry.
Okay. So we're coming into 2018, whoever Shed's review process happens off the foot of, really off the foot of Boucher Hayes's pieces about bogus self-employment, which included RTE. And that was a show that was on Drive Time. So the Evershed's review process started. And you didn't feel that you were self-employed. Is that the case?
Yeah, I didn't really. I mean, I had looked at it a little bit. Now, I have a limited knowledge of, you know, employment law. But, like, there was definitely something about the contract, but the way I was working and the fact that you're there every day and you're kind of, like, you're doing your... It's not like people think, you're not in and out. Like I was, sometimes I'd be in there from 5 o'clock in the morning and you'd be there till 1 o'clock lunchtime, whatever. So there was work being put in. I was there every day, Monday to Friday. And I didn't actually know about the Eversheds process investigation. I didn't know what was going on. And it was only a colleague of mine from Radio 1's pulled me aside one day and said, do you know about this? And I said, no, I haven't heard anything about it. You should ask about it because I, you know, this person had gotten a decision about. And this person had been working for Radio 1 and RT for about 20, 25 years and had always been on contracts. And she told me what she got and all that. And I actually thought she was probably hard done by, but that's the only reason I found out about it. And I went over to HR and I said, I want to talk about this. Am I included in this? Because I think I should be. And basically they said, oh, yeah, you are. And I said, okay, cool. And what they said, no, we looked into you, your case. And I said, okay. Because I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know you were looking into my case. And she said something like, well, not, we didn't tell everybody or something. And I said, okay, grand. Can I see the, you know, the results and what the finding was? Because I would believe that I probably, if you're looking into this and you're thinking who is and who isn't, I would imagine I'm probably not officially a contractor. I can't, you know, because of the way I work. And they said, no, we looked into it and it's, you know, you're not. And I said, well, can I see it? And so, no, we can't. We can't show it because, yeah, you'll remember the term, Martin, but it's under legal.
Legal privilege. Yes.
Legal privilege, which doesn't actually apply to this kind of thing. Legal privilege is something different, but I didn't really know at the time. And I said, well, I don't want to see everybody's, I don't see anything else. I just want to see the information that was looked at about me. And I want to see how they determined that I was, in fact, you know, self-employed, and that was right, and I was a contractor, and I wasn't full-time. Well, I'd like to see that. No, you can't.
That's staggering.
So that was kind of around
Keith, can I ask, at all, I know this sounds really, really probably a bit of a digression, but during all that time,
yeah,
you knew your employment then must have felt more tenuous each time the contracts were lessening, and your situation then, because, you know, you have bills to pay, you've got a life to live, and all of this is going on in the background. How did that all feel in, you know, when outside of the office hours?
Oh, I mean, it's like, it's constant, because even if you think you've got a 3-year contract, like a year into that, you're thinking about the next contract. Like it's only, I know 2 years sounds like a long time, but then it was like our first contract was 2 years. So like as soon as you're into the first contract of 2 years, you're already worrying and having to prove yourself constantly. And even with the contract, Tony, they could still, they still had ways, you still felt they could get rid of you if your listenership wasn't where it should be. Like we took over from Hector. Hector and our show would not be the same in any way. So we basically halved his audience. That meant that we dropped half the audience as soon as we started. But, so like, I mean, if they were looking at that, we'd have been gone within months. But we built it back up to that and beyond. And we went from strength to strength. So listenership-wise, we were confident. But it's not like the JNLRs came out and they could see the growth and you got rewarded and it was like, this is going great. It was always, this still isn't. You never quite knew where you stood. And in fact, you never got a proper review. Very hard to get, you know, get to talk to anybody that was in charge a lot of the time. You were literally kind of on your own. And I remember like having that chat with my colleague who worked on the breakfast show with me. And I was like, Jesus, like, we don't get any feedback. We're kind of blind there. We're just going, doing whatever. We did have a very good producer. And I remember him saying, well, you know, we should get signed. if you get signed for Barcelona, they're not going to teach you how to play football. You just have to go out and do your stuff, which I thought was quite funny that he was comparing us to the footballers of Barcelona. But he had a point in that, like, your name is over the door. It's kind of, you're the face of that show, right? Mm. And everybody washes their hands of you until something good happens. And then everybody, and then the PR department get in and go, oh, this is great. Look at the, I compare it to the Late Late Toy Show or the Late Late Show. Whenever the Late Late Show has big numbers or the Late Late Toy Show has big numbers, it's like brilliant. The PR department, you know, it's all over the place. But they don't really, they never really say it. There's no support from like PR or marketing. It's just there to report good news and kind of just ignore anything else that's going on. Do you know what I mean? No, it's that kind of thing.
Like, so I just mean in terms of as a normal workplace, it's clearly not. And it's, you're obviously working, you know, if you're in another workplace and even if you were a PAYE employee, you'd be looking at going, well, how do I even know I'm doing my job right? You know, it's like, where's my performance evaluation? Where's my goal setting? Where's my supports to actually, you know, if there is a gap here, am I getting training in things that need to help? Am I getting exposure to other things? Am I getting the opportunities other colleagues are getting? Can someone knock on my door and say, actually, you know what, we'd love you to do a slot covering such and such for a few weeks and see, you know, all of these little things that should be part of people's, you know, how do I put this, progression plan that you'd get in a norm. But look, I just wonder, did that take a toll on you mentally?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, by the end of, I went to therapy for about 2 years, full time, nonstop. Every therapist is sick of me, just knocking his door, saying, "Can I?" But seriously, like, I went every week for about a year and a half to a therapist, and it was because I had no clue what had just happened, and the only thing I could figure out was that I must not have been good enough.
No, let's take it back a step, Keith. So you went to HR. You asked about being part of the Eversheds
process.
You were told that it had already happened and the Eversheds process had determined that you were indeed a contractor, as Orty had claimed all along. And they were quite happy with that. You asked to see that decision-making process. You were told, no, it's legally privileged. What happened next before we get to the counselling?
Well, I mean, that was... I think that was kind of close. I feel like that was kind of close enough to the end, or like, you know, maybe it wasn't long after that, you know, months maybe, that the breakfast show finished up. Like, without getting into the details of the hows and the whys, it was a few months later, breakfast show was finishing up. They were bringing in new people. Absolutely fine. This thing's happened. But I found myself then because I was thinking of myself as lured away from the breakfast show, because once you leave your seat or your show, you agree, you say, yeah, I'll go. Once you're gone, you're in limbo, and then it's like, oh yeah.
So they offered you something else to get you off the breakfast show, Keith. Was that the case?
So they offered me another show, yeah.
So you agreed and you were taken off the breakfast show, and then the breakfast show changed behind you, and the job you were told you were going to didn't materialize.
Yeah, it didn't exist. And I do remember the person having a conversation with the person who offered me the other show, who I didn't really trust, as you can imagine. And I looked at
And this is another member of management within RTE. This isn't an outside stranger. This is another part of the management.
It's the same guy that took me on.
Okay.
So I sat down at the table and I was like, I said, I don't trust you. So I'm looking you in the eye and I'm saying, you're telling me there's another show. Yes. You're promising me there's another show. Yes. I need you to swear that, et cetera, et cetera. Because I did not trust him. I didn't trust anybody. And I said, okay, I'm going to take your word for it. And I'll happily take the job. And then it was a thing where, oh yeah, great, shook on it, do whatever, finish up the breakfast show, and then you'll start the other show at some point. And there was like a co-presenter. They told me this is who you're going to be co-presenting with. It was all set as far as that. It was solid. It looked solid. And I had to ask him, was he telling the truth? Over the next few weeks, it just, you know, it was a fugazi. It didn't exist.
But how did it
escaped into the air?
How did it actually end? Was there an actual determinative end point, or did it just peter out like that?
No. There was definitely we're coming towards the end of our contract, and I think at the time I'm trying to remember. I have a feeling I was out of contract, and in my head I was thinking I'm out of contract. I've been working away here doing the same job. I'm good as gold, like I'm as good as staff, you know, in theory. But I do remember my agent being very, really sort of, really wanted me to sign a contract, a final little sort of, you know, you never signed that contract. You need to sign it now. You need to sign it now. And I was like, well, no, I never signed it. Never happened. No one brought it to me. We never had that conversation. But in theory, I was on this 1.5 year contract, which was kind of like, so I'd been a long time out of contract, but in theory, I'd never signed it. So I was like, no, I'm good. I'm like, I've just been working away for a long time without a contract. I'm okay. It's going to be very hard for them to, you know. But I was convinced to sign a contract. It was all very rushed. There was a lot going on. I was a bit confused. I signed this contract, and I feel like once that contract was signed, then the decision was made, you know, in there, someone's head, it was like, okay, that's fine. We have the contract.
So now
all we have to do is tell him.
Yeah, the contract said an end date, did it, Keith?
Yeah, there was an end date in the contract. So once I'd signed that contract, even though it was kind of getting towards the end of the contract, they were like, oh, we could just tell them that the contract's ending now. And I know, looking back now, it was a lot. I was very confused. But looking back now, I'm like, now I know why there was so much panic and why one person wanted me to get a contract. They weren't looking after they were told to get this fella to sign a contract because we need to tell him that his contract is nearly up and he's out of employment. So obviously somebody, legal, HR or whatever, realized that I hadn't, like, where's the contract? Show us the contract. Oh, he mustn't have signed it. Get him to fucking sign it.
And Keith, can I ask now, just at any stage, were there like union representation? Was there anybody, you know, advocating on your behalf?
Joke.
No, that's what I have to ask because I know the answer, but I have to ask, you know?
Oh yeah, no, I didn't even know there was a union. I don't think the union was for us. We weren't, I can remember, I remember joining the credit union, RT. That was a surprise that I was allowed. We were very much separate, you know. There was no union for us. There was nobody to talk to. There was no representative. I don't even think we could have paid into the union if we wanted to, because it was for other people, you know.
Okay, let me just ask you a question, Keith. And I'm jumping forward a little bit here. The unions are going to go into the media committee speaking on behalf of the workers. Do they speak on behalf of you and those who are like you working there?
100% no. No way. Absolutely not.
Like, so your voice is not going to be represented and those like you are not going to be represented at the media committee?
No. I don't even know what the union... I don't even know what they'd be talking about. When it comes to my job and my role and my contract, I had no dealings with the union.
Okay. I'm going to move on. So you were dismissed, effectively, or they let you go. You left. You were befuddled. You didn't really know why you were gone. So explain to us what happened then, please, Keith.
I will tell you something that might be of importance. So I said, look, guys, I'm not just gone. Give me something. Give me a buffer. So they gave me 4 months. So I was running at the end of my contract. I got to the end of my contract and then I had another 4 months. And in that time, COVID hit. RTE in that time, when COVID was on, they wanted Lyric actually to be broadcasting live throughout the day because they felt that nostalgic, you know, looking after people who are at home and all that kind of stuff. So they asked me if I'd do a show on Lyric, even though once the breakfast show finished up, I was running out my contract doing weekends, which I hated. It was absolutely horrible, terrible. But I had to do it. So I said, yeah, I'll do Lyric. Yeah, I'll do that during the day. I can play some old tunes. I can enjoy myself. It's a bit of crack. And so I ended up, even though there was no work for me in RTE, I ended up working 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week. I was also covering on Radio 1 for Rising Time when they were stuck. There was one weekend where I worked Friday. I did two shows Saturday, one for Radio 1 and one for 2FM. I did a show on Sunday and then there was a bank holiday Monday, which I went in and did Rising Time on the bank holiday Monday. And on top of that, working in radio 6-7 days a week, when they'd no work for me, yeah, because they'd gotten rid of me and my contract was running out, the Today Show on television contacted me and asked me to do some television for them. So I was on the Today Show, traveling up and down the country, going to Dingle to do a thing on Fungi or whatever, did a bunch of them, went to invoice the Today Show, in this period. I said, I've sent my invoice, blah, blah, blah. The guy from the Today Show comes back to me. This is Dahi Mora. No slight on them. They're great people. But the guy invoiced, and he said, why are you invoicing? I said, well, because the work. He said, no, we were told, they contacted me to do these bits because they were told that I could do this as part of my contract for no extra money. Somebody else told them. Nobody told me.
So you were doing what you were told to do when you were told to do it, Keith.
Yeah. And I was like, I'd never been busier. I was like, oh, cool, this is it, you know.
How did it actually end, Keith? I want to get to this. How did it actually end? Where was the pivotal moment that it ended?
Look, at the end, my contract was running out. I just said, look, I'm actually done. I'm just going to leave. I didn't even see out the contract. I just said, and I made sure that I made the announcement. I said, I'm leaving. I wanted, at the time, you can imagine. I mean, I didn't want to leave.
You wanted to take a bit of power, though, as well, Keith.
I did. I wanted something. I wanted to be able to say that I'm doing something else. You know, I've had a good time. I didn't say anything bad. I just wanted to, you know, at least say it was my decision. And that was kind of, I suppose, obviously they were happy for me to do that because then I'd be gone and they could just get on with things. And maybe they felt they would have been safe if I hadn't kicked up a fuss at that point and I was just gone and they allowed me to say, like, you know, put up an Instagram post that it was me that decided. Maybe they felt they were safe, you know, that everything, they'd gotten away with it.
Okay, so you then, you made an application to the scope section of the Department of Social Welfare who make determinations on insurability of employment. Basically, you asked the Department of Social Welfare to make a decision, were you an employee or were you self-employed with your time in RTE? Mm. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I believe they were doing these investigations anyway. They had a list of people that they had to contact and they were going to work through the list. I had made the application. They contacted me. I was convinced that they'd only contacted me because someone said, oh, he's looking for his, he's looking for all his emails. He's looking for all his data. And they got, I was convinced they got spooked because I'd heard nothing from social welfare. I'd heard nothing from anybody. I was like, as soon as I asked for my data, social welfare rang me within 2 weeks. Now, I've been assured by social welfare that I was next on the list. It was just a coincidence. So,
yeah, what happened was Keith got in contact with me. I explained to Keith the process of making an application to Scope. And I recommended that Keith should put in a GDPR request, a standard access request to RTE to get all the data they had. As soon as Keith put in the standard access request, the scope section, well, not the scope section, the Employment Status Investigation Unit, contacted Keith, actually really quite immediately, Keith, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very quick. It was such a coincidence that I was convinced. And I was like, what's going on here? You know, I didn't even know that was the scope. Because I was thinking, oh, that's something else. This is something else. You know, this is like, but it was just such a coincidence, you know. But it was great, you know, to get it. And only for Martin and me seeing you on Twitter and going, hang on a second. You were confirming things I thought. But nobody else felt, I talked to other people I know this, and they're like, oh, just move on with your life, will you? And I'm like, yeah, but there was just something. It was a gut feeling that there was something here. And thankfully I saw you and the way you were talking, I was like, yeah, I think this guy knows. He seems to be saying something that I think. Do you know what I mean?
And so tell us about the scope, I mean, the scope section process. How they came, you filled out a form, you spoke to people, they recorded your answers,
yep.
You signed off on your answers. That's really important. So that makes that document, the INS1 form, which is a form they use for these interviews,
yep.
It makes it gold dust evidentially because it's signed. It's not just what somebody says. You've said it, you've recorded, as good as an affidavit, and it's witnessed. So Scope looked at all of this information and they make decisions based on case law and the rulings handed down from the courts. That's it. Nothing else comes into their picture. They look at Keith as a worker. They don't look he's working in RTE. They don't look he's a car mechanic. None of that actually matters. Yeah. It's his relationship with the employer, the person who pays him, that matters, not what he actually does. Process took a while, Keith, and we've been waiting a while, but your decision came through yesterday.
Yeah.
What did the scope section say about your situation in OTE?
So I had to ring you because I was like, I don't know what this means. It said from this date to this date, Keith Walsh is insurable under the Social Welfare Act for all benefits and pensions of PRSI Class A, provided reckonable earnings were 38 euro or more a week, etc., etc. So basically, they're saying I was, by law, an employee and not a contractor.
PRSI Class A is generally employee status. In general, and there are a few little exceptions, but it's generally accepted that's the employee status. So you had been an employee for the entire period you had been with RTE.
Yeah.
Have you worked out what you've missed on for that period, Keith?
I mean, are you talking about the period I was with RTE or the period since?
The period you were with RTE.
Well, I mean, like, the thing about it is when you're self-employed, bearing in mind I'm neurodivergent as well, so ADHD, ASD, I had to get I had to hire an accountant, you know? And, like, I'm not going to say the money was bad. It was okay. But once you pay half that out to the tax man, hire an accountant, I mean, I was not built to be a self-employed person. So it was like, you talk about the contracts coming around, you know, that's a stress. Then you're like, oh, the tax thing, I have to find all my receipts. Where did I put that? And the invoices, then you're like, oh, it's an invoice.
And that's
month.
Before you get the pensions that you should have been entitled to, sick pay you should have been entitled to, all of the other benefits that a normal employee would get, whether it be, you know, statutory entitlements or indeed entitlements that they would have had under a, what you know, because there are really good contracts in RTE. Now, there's a new Yellow Pack contract that we're all aware of as well, but there were really good contracts during the time that you were there, Keith, and, you know, you were doing the same work on shittier terms and conditions than many of your colleagues.
Yeah, I mean, Tony, I'm glad you mentioned those things because I wasn't even aware they existed. The funny thing is, I had a conversation. I insisted on having a conversation with Dee, who was the director general at the time, and I sat down with her and I said, "Look, I'm leaving now. And I know you want me out, so I just want to say a few things." So I had my say.
And that's where we leave you now, folks. If you want to hear the full podcast, the full 45-minute podcast with Keith in relation to what he wanted to say to Dee Forbes and indeed how he's in the honeymoon period now before the inevitable appeal and the waste of taxpayers' funds, that's available, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, at patreon.com/tortoiseshack alongside part two. We will have much more coming your way, including another story that we reckon will make the headlines and we won't get credit for again. But hey, as Martin says, we're here to try and help the workers. Everything else is just ego. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. Thanks to Michael Fry for the use of his kick-ass tune, let's be honest, about the debacle that is RTE. Enjoy.
Reynolds, Reynolds, 2.7.